are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcast by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today we have some breaking news, and that concerns the Supreme Court. Usually the end of June marks the release of a number of decisions that the Supreme Court is making on cases it's heard over several months. So both today, tomorrow, and Monday of next week, we will have a number of Supreme Court decisions being released. At least several of them should be breaking news. Today's breaking news concerns the fact that, and this is no surprise to me and people that follow it, that the Supreme Court ruled or held by a 6-3 vote that Obamacare subsidies for states that didn't set up exchanges, citizens or individuals in those states are eligible for subsidies. Now, that may surprise some of you, but not really if you think about it. I fully anticipated that Justice Roberts would do this for the simple reason he is the one that, in essence, rewrote the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act and made it a tax. It was a rather interesting decision because it surprised most people. For the simple reason, I considered that law and still do unconstitutional. Because what it does is mandates that individuals have to purchase insurance. That is simply unprecedented. And what's interesting is Roberts said that the individual mandate was unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause. Now, if you just heard that, and that's how he started the opinion, and this is 3 years ago, you would have thought that he was going to rule the entire Obamacare unconstitutional. That's not what he did. And I point this out because a lot of people forget this. Under the Supreme Court decision of 3 years ago, the individual mandate is out. Does that mean you don't have to purchase it? Yeah, that's what it means. But what did Roberts do and the majority do? It turned that act, I'll say Obamacare for short, interpreted as a tax. Now, what's interesting, if it's a tax, the bill has to originate in the House. It did not originate in the House, point one. Point two is the Obama administration, as well as the Democrats, maintained all along that this was not a tax. This definitely was not a tax increase. There was a somewhat famous interview between him and, on ABC, George Stephanopoulos, where he took George to task. It's not a tax. It's not a tax. It's not a tax. Yet, what Roberts did is interpret it as a tax to save Obamacare. I was stunned then, and I'm still stunned, that he made what I consider one of the biggest mistakes in his career. He was rewriting the bill. As far as I'm concerned, that the role of the Supreme Court is to interpret the law, not make law, and certainly not rewrite law, and that's what he was doing. So at that point, it left it up to Congress to repeal Obamacare. Well, I think at last count, it's over 60 votes, both in the House and the Senate. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, is as long as President Obama is president, which means we have about 18 months, he's never going to sign any bill that repeals what he considers his legacy to the country. The problem is, if the Republicans do not win the White House, and the Democrats do, namely Hillary Clinton, she's not going to repeal it either. That poses a big problem. What do you do? The remedy is you make it impossible to go forward with it by defunding it. And you really don't want to do that. Ideally, what Congress needs to do, and the Republicans will do it if they control the Senate and the House, and that's an if too. The best case here, and a lot of people are hoping for this, is that both the Senate and the House are controlled by the Republican Party, ideally with 60 Republican senators, at least, and that one of the Republicans win. If that's the case, then Obamacare will be repealed. Right now, the challenge for the Republicans is they need to get behind what they want to put in its place. The words they use is marketplace-based. Well, we had that system, and most people were perfectly satisfied with it. I'm going to review this because we need to put everything in context, and people seem to forget what was motivating Obamacare and what the Democrats were really after and what was the problem that they supposedly were trying to address. So if the Republicans have a clean sweep in 2016, I think Obamacare will be repealed and replaced by something. That something needs to be defined. Right now, up until Obamacare, prior to Obamacare, states regulated insurance. They still regulate insurance. But what happened when Obamacare or the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act was passed, it set forth in regulation what the plans must have. And I'm not going to go over that, but there's not much difference from carrier to carrier to carrier because the design is spelled out by the federal government as to what needs to be included and what needs to not be included. And there's a long list. But what has been the response from the public? And the public is very much split on this. Roughly somewhere between 55 and 60% want Obamacare repealed. The others support it mainly because they get subsidies. In other words, someone else is paying for their insurance. That's what a subsidy is. You're taxing some people to pay the insurance for other people. And it goes on all the time. So obviously, the people that are getting subsidies, especially big subsidies, are all for Obamacare until they start making some good money and then realize they're subsidizing or paying for the insurance of other people. But what's the biggest complaint today? And I've heard it, you've heard it, and it's going to get actually worse. The biggest complaint, first of all, it's more expensive than prior to Obamacare, point one. But more importantly, the deductibles are significantly higher, typically 3 to 5 times. So even if you can afford Obamacare on your own or you can afford it with subsidies, your out-of-pocket is going to be significantly higher. In other words, to get any care at a hospital, for example, you're going to have to pay a deductible typically between about $3,000 to $6,000. I used to sell health insurance, and I was talking to the owners of the company, group health insurance. I sold some individual, mainly group health insurance. The employers typically could pay a higher deductible, would have no problem paying, most of them would have no problem paying a $3,000 to $6,000 deductible because they're successful businesses and they can pay it. They're making money. However, when presenting it, I would get a question typically, well, how can I save some money? I'd say, well, one thing you could do is increase your deductible. And the employer would say, well, I know I can afford it, and they could, but I know my employees can't. They can't write a $3,000 or $5,000 check, which you're going to have to do under Obamacare. See, this is one of the problems when you have a bunch of bureaucrats getting together with the executive insurance companies and designing these plans. They've never sat across the table from business owners that actually pay for the group insurance. Nor, for that matter, none of them, or rarely are you going to run into people in Washington that have sold insurance. There are few, but rare. Because it's a principle. If you want to save money on the premiums, take a higher deductible. That's a standard recommendation. But I would always couch it in this terms. You must be able to write that check, and you must be comfortable writing that check. It's not going to be a burden. Oh, no problem. I can write a $5,000 check. Very few people, except the very well-to-do, the very wealthy, can do that. And it's true. People many people are living paycheck to paycheck. And even if they have savings for retirement. It's for retirement. It's not for paying health insurance. So typically what the employer would say is, no, I can't go to a higher deductible. But I'd see, at one time, deductibles were like $100 or $250 or $500. Now they're typically $1,000 or more. So when I was in the business, they would go, for example, to $500 deductible. And then over time, that increased to $1,000. Not everybody. If a company's doing real good, they'll stick with the lower deductible. But not all businesses can do that. So that's what's happened. That's what basically changed from the old insurance market, which was working. About 85%, at least 85% of the people that had their health insurance through their employer were satisfied with it. Does that mean it was perfect? No. Everyone is going to complain about their health insurance for various reasons. Some want significantly better coverage, and you can get excellent plans, but you get what you pay for. Or you can get junk, and there's junk out there. I'll be the first to say that. I didn't sell junk. I sold excellent coverage from outstanding companies, and it was always more expensive. But that's what the employers wanted, and yes, that's what the employees expected. Because what you need to understand from the owner or the employer's point of view, he needs to first attract good employees, and he needs to retain good employees. Because of that, he wants the best coverage that his company can afford. Now, what some companies would do was pay for the employee's coverage, and then there would be for the spouse or the children that have to pay a certain dollar amount or a certain percentage. But they're real sensitive, both the owners or the employers and the employees are real sensitive to the deductibles. Most people can pay a $100 deductible or a $500 deductible or even a $1,000 deductible. Most people, not all. But when they have to start writing checks for $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, that becomes a problem. And then when you combine that with much higher premiums, they don't like Obamacare. That's the one, those, what I just outlined are the reasons why most people object to Obamacare. They had a plan that they were satisfied with. They had a doctor that they were satisfied with and the hospitals that they go to. And what did the federal government do? It interfered with the private market system. And what the federal government did with Obamacare imposed designs of those insurance plans that made the plan significantly more expensive, both from a premium point of view as well as a deductible point of view. Now, I'll talk about the subsidies in a minute. And most people get their coverage through their employer. Who doesn't get their coverage through an employer? Obviously, if you're self-employed, and I was, you have to buy your own coverage, which I had to. And that means individual coverage. And individual coverage, first of all, is medically underwritten, which means you have to ask questions of the person to see if there are any pre-existing conditions, and it is more expensive because you're not dealing with a larger group to spread the risk. And that means, and the other problem is, especially going back to the Clinton administration when Hillary Care was being discussed and proposed, a lot of companies got out of the individual market. So there's less competition. There are fewer companies in that in the individual market. So what happens if you're not successful as a self-employed individual, many people, and I've been in this situation too, go uninsured. I don't recommend it. As a matter of fact, if you're in that situation, I think you seriously should give some thought to going to work for a larger company that does provide medical insurance if that is a concern. Many, many people go insured for many, many, many years. They are taking a calculated risk. The actuaries will tell you, though, young people, typically between 18 to 34, are the people that typically are uninsured and don't buy it. But why don't they buy it? Because from their point of view, there is a much lower probability that they're seriously going to need medical coverage to pay for large medical bills. Does that mean young people don't get in accidents? Yes, they do. And have large medical bills? Yes, they do. But as a percentage of all claims, it's rather small. The key point here is, and it's something that some people are aware of, your biggest medical bills will be by far the last year of your life. and that's usually when you're much older. By far, your largest medical bills is in your last year of your life, where you probably will go under, you'll have surgeries or have a serious medical condition. For example, you'll have heart disease, heart attacks, strokes, cancer, and other high blood pressure, diabetes. Most of that happens when people get older. So if you look at insurance rate, what happens? Or the premiums you have to pay. As you get older, the premiums go up, 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 and up. Not hard to understand, and young people understand that. And the problem with young people was, and still is, they think they're going to live forever. They're on usually a limited income because they're starting their careers and would rather spend the money someplace else. Yes, if the employer pays for all of their health insurance, yeah, they'll sign up. But once you start making them have to pay a significant amount of their paycheck, they balk at it and decline coverage. So what was facing the government is, how can we get a lot of young people, force them to get insurance? And that was what the mandate, the individual mandate, was all about, forcing young people to sign up and pay premiums. Now, the young people are not stupid. Where are most of their premiums going? They're going to pay the bills of sicker and older people. But that's what's behind the individual mandate. See, a lot of young people really are excited about Obamacare, and we're going to get subsidy. I've heard this once. I've heard it a dozen times. We're going to get free health care. No, you're not. They're forcing you to buy insurance, health insurance, because the largest percentage, it varies from year to year, but roughly about 50% of the uninsured are between 18 and 34. Now, what happens is when people get married and start to have a family, then they become real concerned about health insurance because they're worried about pregnancy and having a child, and the child have various childhood diseases. They're also worried about the birth complications. So suddenly, young people, once they get married and are serious about starting a family, that's when health insurance suddenly becomes, if not a top priority, a key priority. Now, I'm giving you all this information for a reason. What was the primary goal of Obamacare? What was the key? One of the key goals was to get the number of uninsured down. That's why we have Obamacare. But what's the problem? If you looked at the number you heard bouncing around 2009 when they were considering Obamacare, and I remember it well, was 45 million uninsured. You heard that once, you heard it a dozen times. There are 45 million uninsured. Now, the first thing you need to understand, well, so they're uninsured, but does that mean they don't get medical assistance if they need it? No. Because if they go to a hospital emergency room, and many people were doing it that didn't have insurance, they have to be treated under law. So just because someone is uninsured does not mean he will not get medical care. But let's break that 15 million number down. I would say at least 10 to 15 million of those 45 million were illegal aliens. They're working here in the United States. They're making good money compared to whatever country they came from. But they're not making enough money that they can really afford health insurance. The problem Congress had is the American people are not going to pay taxes to pay for the health insurance of illegal aliens, or if you prefer, undocumented workers. Now, I'm not going to go into the fact that the number you were hearing then and now is you have 10, 11, 12 million illegal aliens in the country, because that's simply not the case. It's somewhere between 30 and 50 million. No one knows the exact number. It could actually be higher. And not all of them are working. So let's go with somewhere between 10 and 15 million are illegal aliens. Well, if you take the 15 million as the high number, that leaves you with about 30 million uninsured American citizens. Now, those people tend to fall into three groups. And the numbers tend to vary depending on whether the economy is booming or whether you're going into a recession. When you're going into a recession, the number of uninsured goes up because you have more people that are unemployed. Once they become unemployed, they lose their coverage, point one. And point two is they can't afford paying for medical insurance. That number is somewhere between 10 and 15 million. At the height of the recession, 208, early 209, it probably hit 15 million. Once we were on the so-called road to recovery, that number is going to go down. I don't know where it is today. I don't think it's at 10 million. It's somewhere between 10 and 15 million. Those are people that are unemployed. They lost their coverage because they're between jobs. As they become employed, they either get the coverage back through their employer or in a position to buy it. You also have 10 million that are simply poor. They don't work, can't work, or if they do, they're not making enough money, not getting enough hours. They qualify for Medicaid. You don't need a new program if you have a program that addresses that. Now, what Obamacare did was expand the eligibility of people for Medicaid, increased it to, I think it's 138% of the poverty line. Now, what you need to know about Medicaid, many doctors and healthcare providers don't accept it. And the reason is very simple. They have a limited number of hours in a year that they can work. And again, depending on what your specialty is, they have either people that have insurance or can pay cash. They don't need to mess with poor people. It's that simple. They don't want to mess with Medicaid. So they're not going to. They can fill their appointment book with people that are paying customers. That's why many healthcare providers, doctors, don't take Medicaid. Now, there's some that do, but it's difficult to find specialists. So even if you enroll in Medicaid, you're going to have difficulties finding someone that will treat you. I'm not saying it's impossible. It depends where you are. Obviously, in a very large city, you could probably find someone. You're out in the boondocks, good luck, especially if you need a specialist. My point being is this. There were at least 10 million people that already had a program that was designed to help them. Yeah, they're uninsured. They're uninsured because they're poor or indigent. They're not making enough money. They're in poverty. They can't afford. Obviously, if you're in poverty, you're worried about having a roof over your head and food to eat. So you don't buy health insurance. And that's what the Medicaid program, not Medicare, Medicaid was designed to do. And all these estimates that I'm giving you here are going to fluctuate. I'm just giving you a ballpark so you can understand what we're dealing with. And that's roughly 10 million. And you have another 10 million. And these are people that can actually afford insurance, but again, chose not to buy it. And they're typically young people between 18 and 34. So you have four groups that I'm talking about in that 45 million number of uninsured. One is illegal aliens. The American people are not going to pay for them. Two, you have the people that could buy health insurance but chose not to. Then you have people between jobs that will get insurance once they become reemployed again. And finally, you have the poor. So instead, you start out with a 45 million number. But the truly needy that need help are the 10 million, and they can get it with Medicaid. Now, the difficult group is those that have savings, have a retirement plan, and become unemployed. What typically happens, they go without coverage until they get a new job. Can they actually afford insurance? Most of them can, but it means dipping into savings that they'd rather not do because they don't know how long they're going to be unemployed. And what people do is they make a list. What has to be paid first? The rent has to be paid first. The electric bill has to be paid first. The utilities have to be paid first. Otherwise, we're out on the street. Then it's food. And then typically it's the car. I'm assuming they have some clothes. And when you go down that list, guess what? They don't buy. They don't buy health insurance. That's what's going on here. Now, the key purpose, the primary goal of Obamacare was to reduce the number of uninsured. They did that for the simple reason you have millions of people that are eligible for Medicaid that simply don't sign up, and now you have an expanded definition of Medicaid, namely increasing the poverty level that it went to 138% for some states that accepted it. But here's what you need to understand. Every state in this country is paying for Medicaid, and it's usually split between the federal government and the state. Most state budgets Medicaid is usually number one or two in terms of budget outlays, with education typically being either one or two. The big budget-busting dollar amount is for Medicaid, and that's money to pay the health for health care for the poor. That's why we have the program, and it's been existent for many years. So when you consider that and the fact the American people are not going to stand for paying the health insurance for people that are not American citizens, you're really talking, for Medicaid alone, it's about 10 million people. And you're going to have another 10, maybe 15 million that are unemployed, but that's a temporary situation. So why Obamacare has made some progress in getting the number insured down, what did it do, and why is it so unpopular? Most Americans were satisfied with their health insurance. And now they're becoming increasingly dissatisfied because you messed with their lives. You interfered with lives. What, you know, there are very few goods or services that, in terms of consumer satisfaction, rate 85% or more. There's always going to be people that are complainers. They don't like the fact that their employer picks the plan and that plan doesn't cover something that they really want covered, or they think it's too expensive. And I have no idea how, yeah, you could always, occasionally I'd run into a business owner. I want the cheapest you can get me. Don't have any money, but I need something. I said, well, sorry, sir, I don't sell that, because I'll tell you something. They'll take your money, but they won't pay your claims. Or you're going to have a difficult situation getting them to pay their claims. And a lot of times, even if they do pay it, and most of them do pay for the small stuff, it's simply not adequate insurance. In other words, it's garbage. I admit, there are insurance out there that I would never buy, and people were buying it. But if it gets back to the point, you get what you pay for, and the problem you run into is the affordability question. That is the key reason most people don't get health insurance. Most people that are responsible know that it's in their interest to have health insurance. Because if they don't have it, and then suddenly they either are in an accident or develop a serious disease, they can be out hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they're never going to be able to pay that back. So that's why it's always good to have some, and preferably good, health insurance. The problem is, this is the worst of both worlds, if you will. The overwhelming majority of American people do not like the fact that their health insurance premiums have gone up, nor do they like the fact that their deductibles are much higher. And because of that, and that is a majority, and that's not going to change, it actually is going to get worse. Now, why do I say that? And it's going to start next year. Why do I say that? The health insurance companies, the people that market this, and a lot of people don't understand, a lot of insurance companies got out of the health insurance industry completely. You only have a few major companies that are selling this. And they're very large insurance companies, and they're usually national. I'm not going to give them any plugs, but I'm just trying to tell you, again, you have less competition. They didn't know how many people were going to enroll in these plans. And what they were really concerned about was the problem of adverse selection, where the people that know they're sick and have a medical condition, you better believe they're going to enroll in this plan. They know they have major medical bills, especially if they have a chronic condition. And the problem with adverse selection is the people that purchase it are going to have big medical bills. You want a mix of people that probably won't use it at all or seldom for small stuff, as well as the people that are chronically ill or develop a major or have a major medical condition that automatically means claims. So it's not surprising to me that people enrolled in these plans, especially if you have a serious medical condition. Now, what happens to the people that are healthy? Many of them are not enrolling in these plans. They're either going to have to pay a penalty, or they're simply not going to pay the penalty. Come get me. And that's a problem. Yeah, it's a penalty. It's a tax penalty. I know what some are going to say. I'm not required by law. The Supreme Court had a Supreme Court decision that you can't force an individual to buy insurance. And that's absolutely correct. But what the Supreme Court did 3 years ago say you can tax them, though. And a penalty is a tax. Even though the Obama administration and the Democrats were saying, oh, that's not a tax, that's a penalty. But once the Supreme Court said it's a tax, they saluted it because that's the ultimate, that was the bottom line of the court. No, you can't force people to buy health insurance. Yes, you can hit them with a penalty. Now, the problem is this. The healthy, the young and the healthy, especially those that don't qualify for subsidies, but even people that do qualify for some subsidies are saying, I'm not going to buy it. And that's been the problem historically. Young people tend not to buy health insurance unless the employer provides it. And you need those people to what? Subsidize the sicker and the older, emphasizing the sicker here. And that's the problem with adverse selection. Now, what does that mean? The premiums are going to go up significantly, double-digit numbers. And it's not going to get any better because as you increase the premiums, what happens? People drop out. Even with the subsidies, will drop out. Catch me if you can. I'm not going to buy the insurance. I don't want it. I can't afford it. Remember, affordability is the key issue here. And you're going to get a spiral. You get 3, 4, 5 years of double-digit increases in premiums. What's going to happen? Two things. The number of people enrolled in the plan will go down, down, and down. And the subsidies, the only people that will qualify are the people that need the subsidies. Have become dependent on the government for those subsidies, which means other people are paying their insurance. And that's what it is. Other people are paying their insurance if you need subsidies. That's why, as a matter of principle, as one for limited government and individual responsibility, I'm against any subsidies. No subsidies for anything. For anything. I don't care who benefits. Many of these subsidies go to corporations. But others go to individuals. That's what we're talking about here. So I'm not surprised that at most 40 to 45% of the American people are for this. But who are those people? They are the poor, the unemployed, primarily. And many of those people simply don't vote. And that's an important point. So when it comes to the 2016 election, 2018 election, and 2020 election, what's going to happen? The people that have been adversely affected, namely those that are getting those subsidies, don't like Obamacare for a whole host of reasons, primarily the cost, the deductibles, the fact that they can't go to the doctors that they want to. They have a much narrower range of health care providers or hospitals that they can go to, are going to blame the Democrats. And that's right. That's who they should blame because no Republican voted for this. Obamacare was designed, written by the Democratic Party and its supporters. So the Democratic Party is going to pay a political price, and they should pay a political price. You shove this down the throats of the American people that were largely satisfied with what they were buying and what they had. Yeah, they're going to get mad, and they're going to go after the Democrats that wrote this. I'm not surprised in the 2010, 12, 14 election, Democrats are losing big time. You see, what the Democratic Party wanted to do is not Obamacare. They wanted single payer, and where the single payer is the federal government. That's what they were aiming for. In other words, eliminating entirely the private marketplace for health insurance. That's what they wanted. In other words, they didn't want competition. They wanted a government monopoly on health care. Why? To control you, control everybody. They were playing what I call the Santa Claus socialism game. I'm going to give you a benefit, and every time the elections come around, you're going to have to remember that we provided this benefit. There are always people that I call takers that will take the subsidies. I have a friend that has this attitude. Take advantage of it, whether it's food stamps, welfare, take advantage of it. There are other groups of people, and I include myself in this group, that don't want to be dependent on anybody, but especially the government. I don't trust them, point one, and I don't think it is the government's job to provide anyone with health insurance. If health insurance is something that's of concern, that's something you really want and need, then buy it. Either work for a company that provides it or earn it on your own. Don't go hat in hand with your hand out give me a subsidy because I can't afford it. Now, I quickly want to add, there are some people that I consider the truly needy. They are profoundly disabled, simply cannot work, and probably will never work a day in their life, or very rarely can work. And yes, the government needs to provide for them, and society wants the government to provide for them. And that's why we have Medicaid. Simply, that's why we have Medicaid. Is it the best program? No, absolutely not. But when you're simply poor and you really can't work, you get what people can give you, and what they can give you is Medicaid. The problem today is we have too many people that can work, want to work, and don't. In other words, they're happy to be on the dole, to take the benefits the government is providing them. Now, I need to make an important distinction between welfare and entitlement programs. In entitlement programs, you are paying in to those programs, namely Social Security and Medicare. Every paycheck taken out of your paycheck based on the amount of money you're earning is money that goes for Social Security, disability, unemployment, and for Medicare. It is a pay-as-you-go system. What you are paying in goes out to pay for those that are now eligible for those programs. That is different from welfare, where the person hasn't paid anything in, but is getting a benefit or subsidy from somewhere else. I'm all for the federal government providing that assistance to the truly needy. The problem is these programs have expanded in size where many of the people on them shouldn't be on them. They need a job. Someone will say, well, what's your answer to this? Cut to the chase. The answer is have an economy where the economic incentives are strong, that first you have people that want to start businesses and expand businesses, because what do they create? They create jobs, where everyone that wants a job can work. And as these businesses, new businesses, expand, grow, they're successful, what do? They offer their employees first health insurance, and then better health insurance, and then a retirement plan. The answer to welfare is a good-paying job for everybody. Everyone that wants to work can work. And we want the economic incentives to be such that people are encouraged to start businesses, business formation. And once you have that going, you need capital formation to expand your operations. In other words, you need a growing, prosperous, booming economy, which this, unfortunately, is not. The economy has very much been stagnating. The historical growth rate of the United States over many decades is roughly 3%. We have been growing around 2%. Actually, right now, less. And it looks like we might be going into a recession. I hope not, but it looks like that seems to be maybe in the cards. And one indication of that is look at the railroads and to the extent they're carrying goods. Now, I don't want to get into that, but the key point here, the primary key goal of the Obama administration was to reduce the number of uninsured. Have they done it? To a limited extent. But before, we didn't need Obamacare to get people that qualified for Medicaid on Medicaid. You know, if people that are legitimately qualify for it don't apply, is that my fault? Is that society's fault? No, it's available. Now, I'll tell you when they will apply for it. When they have a serious illness, a disease, or an accident, then suddenly they're going to apply for it. You know, I always get a chuckle. People get enrolled in Medicaid, or they enroll in this insurance that's subsidized. You have an insurance card or you have a Medicaid card. And I always say, okay, now go get some medical care. See, a card, an insurance card, is not medical care. However, and this is the big key, and this used to drive me crazy because I used to pay cash. Go to a doctor's office. You know what one of the first questions they're going to ask you after your name and address and phone number? Who's your insurance with? Can I see your insurance card? Because they know who pays and who doesn't, or who pays better than others. They want to know, are you covered by insurance? And the reason why it used to drive me nuts, sometimes I would say, listen, I pay cash. I'd like to know the price. What do you mean price? Well, like you go to the grocery store, you know, you a loaf of bread, you have different choices. What's the price? And I'm assuming I knew the medical condition. Listen, I have a sinus infection. I like the doctor to examine me. Two, I want a prescription. How much is it? I don't know. It's one of the few businesses in the country where there are no sticker prices at all. And when you make clear, listen, I'm going to pay cash. I'm going to pay cash now. What's the price? Then suddenly they start figuring it. And I want a discount for paying cash. Because, see, what do the insurance companies do? They negotiate with doctors and hospitals a price. And it's less than what you're going to have to pay. I understand that. Now, I've gotten a little astray because I need to get back to the Supreme Court ruling. But I needed to give you this history because a lot of people forget, why do we have Obamacare at all? It was really to address the fact that the big problem was the uninsured. And I'll be the first to say, yes, there's been some progress. I would hope so after spending so much money on this piece of garbage. But they really haven't made a big dent in it. And they aren't going to make a dent in it. You're still going to have at least 30 million people without insurance. And I know why. People can't afford it. It goes back to affordability. They can't afford it, or they're... The two key reasons are affordability and they're unemployed. They're between jobs. By far, those are the two reasons. The third reason is you have young people that can't afford it that don't want to pay for it. They want to spend their money on something else. One, two, three. Affordability, they're between jobs. I can afford it, but I'm young and I'm not going to waste my money on that. I want a new car. I want to go to college. Long list of reasons before health insurance. And remember, the mandate is no longer by the Supreme Court. The one thing, the only thing that Roberts got right is that Obamacare is that provision of the Obamacare, or the, if you will, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, is unconstitutional. You cannot under the Commerce Clause force people to buy stuff. However, you can force people to pay taxes. You see, once he made that statement and correctly decided that it's unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause to force people to buy it, he should have ruled the entire bill unconstitutional. Instead, he ruled it as a tax. As night follows day, it's clear he's trying and stretching and rewriting the Obamacare Act. And what do you think he's going to do when it's challenged in terms of the subsidies? And let me get into that. The way the law was designed is states were strong. The federal government wanted the states to expand Medicaid. So if you went along with that and established the exchanges in your state, the people in your state would get the subsidies. However, if you did not expand Medicaid, like Texas and a number of states, I think 26, 27, or you did not set end, or you did not set up an exchange, you would not get a subsidy. In other words, even if they enrolled in the federal exchange, which was really a backstop, you could buy coverage through the federal exchange, for example, if you're in a state that doesn't have an exchange. But if you did, you weren't eligible for subsidies. That's what they had in mind. And the law is rather clear on this, you would have thought, until today. Now, I'm not surprised Roberts did this. He's trying to save Obamacare no matter what, and he's just continuing to rewrite the law, as are the liberals. And Roberts is considered a conservative, although some people will question that. And the liberals go along with it because they want Obamacare. And it was a 6-3 decision. You see, the original decision was 5-4. And really, I thought the decision was 5-4, making it unconstitutional. Then someone got to Roberts. As many people have joked, what does Obama have on Roberts? Why did he suddenly change his position? I think he did change his position, probably at the last moment. Because many people 3 years ago including me, thought Obamacare is unconstitutional. You can't force people to tell them, and that's what they're doing, you have to buy something. That's totally unprecedented. You can regulate commerce, but you can't create commerce. There's another way to say it. You can't force people to buy what they don't want to buy. And that's true. At least Roberts understood that. And I will tell you, that is true. If people don't want to buy something, they don't buy it. And they won't buy it whether there is a tax, a penalty, or anything else. And they especially don't buy it when they say, I can't afford it. Sorry, man, I don't have the money. And the subsidies don't cut it. And I'm not going to pay for something, thousands of dollars, and then when I really need it, have to spend another $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 or more on a deductible. I'm not going to buy this piece of you-know-what. So the people getting the subsidies, oh, they like that. Something for nothing. What's going on here, the power of the government is being used to coerce through taxation and use those taxes to pay for subsidies. In other words, if your neighbor, I've used this example before, if your neighbor knocks on your door or rings your doorbell, hey, I got to pay my health insurance. Give me some money. I need $500 to pay for my health insurance. What are you going to do? Are you out of your mind? You're going to slam the door. Or you might say, listen, get a job, work harder, go shop it. I'm not paying for your insurance. But when the government does it through taxation, I consider it stealing your hard-earned money to pay someone else's bills. And that's what's going on here. And yes, that's probably maybe 40% of the U.S. population that are demanding subsidies, that think they're entitled to subsidies. And what the vast majority of the American people are saying, thanks but no thanks. Get a job or get a better paying job. And if health insurance is really a concern of yours, then cut back on your other expenditures. No one ever mentions the fact many of these people that don't have insurance have money, and they're spending it on things. I don't care if it's a big television set or a vacation or a new car or a new house. They have money. They just don't think that health insurance should be number 1, 2, 3, or 4. It's at the bottom of the list. And what happens is they go through their paycheck, they go through their credit cards and say, I can't afford health insurance. They can't afford it. They just don't want to buy it. And that's why the government should never have interfered. And that's what we're getting at this decision. It's interfering. It is rewriting that law completely. It is very clear if your state did not set up an exchange, you were not eligible for subsidies, even if you bought it in the federal exchange. Chief Justice Roberts is rewriting this law and the people that were in the majority. They have gone beyond the law, and that is not their job. It is not their job. They're betraying their oath of office. There's no right in the Constitution for you to have health insurance. Dream on. And ultimately, Obamacare will, one way or the other, fail. It will fail largely for several reasons. One, you force this on the American people when there was no great need for it, except for those that were uninsured. In other words, the majority of the American people were happy with what they had. Doesn't mean it couldn't have been better, but what they had was affordable for most people, and they liked their plan. And they were lied to by the President of the United States. You know the quote, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. And it's going to save you money. None of that is true. In other words, the American people were sold a bill of goods. And now, in the upcoming elections in 2016, 18, 2022, however long it takes, the Democratic Party are going to pay a significant price. Doesn't mean they're going to lose all elections. But every year, because I was in the health insurance business. That wasn't all I did. That was part of what I was a financial planner for, largely business owners. Some individuals, but largely business owners. And every year I would have to go out and explain why their health insurance premiums have gone up. I actually can remember a couple of years when they went down, but usually they went up a few percentage points. And invariably, some would say, now I understand, the prices, everything's gone up. I can live with it. Or you need to shop it for me. See if we can get something else that's comparable, but a little bit cheaper. You see, individuals and businesses are very much price sensitive. If the premiums go up too much, they're definitely going to, either they're going to do it, or you as the agent or broker for that person are going to have to shop it. In other words, see if there are other plans out there that can get the premium down, or stay with the current carrier. And typically what most businesses will do is up the deductible. But we're talking from like, from 100 to 250, 250 to 500, 500 to 750, 750 to 1,000. We're not talking about going from 1,000 to 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000. And the reason is this: most employees can't write that check. And that's why Obamacare is really unpopular. The premiums are going to be going up, 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 and up every single year. You mark my words, and I think we're talking double digits. And the deductibles, everyone is screaming about the deductibles and the copays, but largely the deductibles. It's the deductibles and the premiums. They're way too high. And I contend it was designed that way, because what the Democrats really want is single payer. See, I disagree with Justice Roberts when he says that Obamacare was really designed to improve health insurance. No, it wasn't. It was designed to destroy the health care industry so they could go to single payer. That's what this was about. They wanted single payer. The problem is, this has been such a disaster that they're never going to get single payer for at least another 20 or 30 years, if ever. Because of the bad taste this has left in a lot of people's mouths. You don't force people to buy anything in this country. You can try that and succeed in communist China or the former Soviet Union, but not in the United States. People want choices. It's common sense. Just go into a grocery store. You have a lot of choices. Just take bread. You can buy the cheapest bread or the premium brand. It's up to you. What can you afford? What are your preferences? And if you can't afford it, we have food stamps. And you can go in the grocery store, buy groceries, and swipe your card. People want, the Americans, consumers want, the consumers of the world, what they want is choice. They don't want to be told by the government what they must buy and what they must buy, what it has in terms of benefits. In other words, they don't want a bureaucrat or a lawyer or a politician dictating to them what they must buy and must pay for. The Democratic Party are going to pay a stiff political price for what they try to do and try to pull. They're always going to get 30-40% of the vote from the people that are truly dependent on government, that have no choice. Their problem there is many of those people simply don't vote. The people that are making money, follow this, are successful, they vote. The middle class will vote, and they're not happy about Obamacare. They're not happy about the Democratic Party forcing them out of their existing plans into something that they simply don't want, they think is worse, and they think it's more expensive. And ladies and gentlemen, they're absolutely right, and it's going to get worse. And now we have the Supreme Court for the second time. It had two cracks at this to make it unconstitutional. And both times, Justice Roberts rewrote the law. That is not his job. It's not his job. His job was to determine whether it was compliant in terms of the Constitution, and it wasn't. And he knew the reason, the Commerce Clause. He argued that point. In essence, you can't force people to buy something. You can't force people to engage in commerce. Yes, you can regulate commerce, but you can't create commerce, is how I would summarize it. He knew the reason for making it unconstitutional. Yet he attempted and is attempting, both in his first decision, which he wrote the majority opinion for, and this decision, to totally rewrite the law. I think it's immoral. I think it's illegal. I think it's unconstitutional. And I believe firmly that this is the biggest mistake Chief Justice Roberts has ever made. You see, there are a lot of bright people, very intelligent people, and I include most of the people on that Supreme Court. But I have learned through bitter experience that intelligent people are not necessarily the wisest people. They can ruin their lives. They can make serious mistakes. Yes, they're bright. Some would say the best and brightest. But the best and brightest are not necessarily the wisest. You don't push around the American people. And that is what both the Supreme Court is doing as well as Congress. And there will be pushback against both what the Supreme Court is doing as well as what President Obama and the Democratic Party did. And you'll see it in the polls. And I have a warning to the Republican Party. If you should have control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, you better repeal Obamacare and you better replace it with something that is affordable, gives choice to the individual, is portable. In other words, people can take it from one job to the next. And ideally, you should have tort reform that is driving up the cost of medical care. In other words, Congress, or more specifically the Republican Party, better come through on this, because if they don't, the same thing that's happening to the Republican Party will happen to the same thing that's happening to the Democratic Party will be happening to the Republican Party. And I'm not truly 100% confident that the Republican Party is up to the job. I know they've had 60 votes to try to repeal it. The vote that's going to count will probably take place in 2016, assuming, again, that a Republican is elected president. It better happen. It better happen in a timely fashion. I understand you might have a one-year transition period, but the American people are watching, and they want Obamacare, or the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, repealed completely and ideally replaced with something that's very much market-oriented and not government-directed. In other words, fosters competition, increases consumer choice, and gets the government out of the health insurance business, where it simply doesn't know what it's doing, and it's screwing up the lives of the American people, and they're not happy about it, and you better change it as soon as you can, or you too will be voted out of office with the Democrats. With that, I'll close my show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcast by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio.